With the passing of the One Big Beautiful Bill in the US and an about turn on many of the policy measures introduced by the Inflation Reduction Act, it's clear the energy sector in the US is in a state of flux. It can be seen as a highly politicized topic as people weigh the future of the green energy transition and the need to develop infrastructure at speed and scale. How developers and utilities communicate their investment strategies with stakeholders and communities has really never been more important. In an age where trust and transparency can't be overstated, I wanted to learn more about how to develop and maintain credibility in a polarized landscape, such as the one facing the US energy sector right now. To get more insight into the topic, I had a conversation with John Lacey, Senior Vice President and Director of Public Affairs at MOA Agency. MOA has provided support for over 15,000 megawatts of wind and solar projects, as well as over 1,400 miles of transmission infrastructure. So John had some valuable experience and learnings to share when it comes to reducing project risk through effective stakeholder engagement. John also highlighted the importance of keeping communities at the heart of all infrastructure development, no matter your political stance. I'm Pamela Larg, and this is the Energy Transitions Podcast. John, thank you so much for joining me today. We're talking about a really important topic that perhaps doesn't receive the attention it needs to. And I think in terms of what's happening in the US at the moment, especially with the One Big Beautiful Bill being passed, you know, the policy landscape is really in a state of flux. So how are developers and utilities and communities having to rethink their decision-making, their communication strategies, their investment in projects? Give us a bit of a top-down view in terms of what MOA is seeing at the moment, and perhaps also tell us a little bit more about MOA.
Great, thank you. And I'll start there. You know, MOA is a full-scale communications firm, but we're a bit unique because we have a specialty that focuses on energy and sustainability. And within that specialty, we have a team that is dedicated to helping developers site energy projects. Where the magic happens is we work with projects that are highly contentious, projects that see strong opposition and use tactics that are proven to hurt projects. And we help create engaging community relations programs that emphasize, you know, establishing trust and speaking with relevance. And I can get into that specifically, but you also touched on the topic of, you know, what we're seeing broadly, especially here in the U.S., and while I think that some of the changes we've seen recently are head spinning, to us it's still a pretty exciting time. You know, with the energy landscape, it just demands more. You know, more generation, more transmission, more storage, and it can't happen unless projects can overcome increasingly effective opposition to development. You know, we need more energy more than ever, and despite the heated rhetoric, it's my personal view that there actually is broad political agreement that we need to build more infrastructure. You know, we are seeing heat pumps becoming a stronger part of heating and cooling within residents and buildings. We are seeing just the huge demands that are coming online with AI. There's just increased demand, but whether you are on the left or the right, there seems to be a unity of purpose. You know, on the left, they're talking about abundance. They're talking about the desire and need to build more. And on the right, they're talking about energy dominance. You know, they're two very different approaches, but we think that both roads lead to the same spot.
John, that's fascinating. You say there is some political agreement. I think from an outsider's perspective, that isn't always as clear. So it's really, it's good to get your insights into this. Yes, The changes have been head spinning. Well said, and surely even if there is some consensus, you know, there are some developers perhaps that are having to rethink their strategies or the focus of their investments. Tell us a little bit about that. You know, what impact are these head spinning policy changes actually having?
So I think that when you look at the from the very top level, it's an adjustment in emphasis. We, over the past couple years with the IRA, the amount of investment specifically in renewables has been substantial. But that investment was occurring prior to the IRA. It was a little more geographically focused for in states and localities that may have had our renewable portfolio standards, but you know, renewable development specifically existed then. But when the IRA was enacted, it's not as if the DOA got rid of all of its coal experts either. So it's a shifting of priorities where you'll see one come further into the fore and another recede a bit, and it'll go back and forth. But it doesn't mean that the pendulum is completely swung in one direction. And that, I think, that when developers particularly look at their portfolios and their approaches, especially in the renewable space, you're going to see a greater emphasis on making sure that projects make it successfully to the finish line. And to do that, and I can talk, you really do need to factor in pushing back on opposition and working with communities to create support for these projects. And I can go into some of the costs that are associated with opposition, but now more than ever, you got to get to the finish line, and you can't really do that unless you have effectively dealt with opposition.
It's interesting that you say that, because I don't think that I've always necessarily been aware of the opposition that these projects are facing and necessarily how that manifests. Give us an idea, John, of the kind of opposition that needs to be overcome in order for these projects to actually realize.
Let me talk about this on two levels. And the first is the kind of the top line approach that you'll see when it comes to community pushback. You know, project opposition is a fundamental issue that can drive significant costs for a project. And developers need subject matter experts with a proven ability to manage the toughest challenges. Let me talk about that specifically. You know, ask any developer what keeps them up at night. You know, it's not some of the standard aspects of development. You know, nobody's sweating wetland delineation. It really is community and stakeholder opposition. Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory came out with a study in 2023. That cited community opposition as a number one reason that projects get canceled. They also did a really good job looking at what the cost impacts for delays are. And it's pretty astounding. You know, they estimated that for solar and wind, a delay costs about $200,000 per megawatt. And you know, two of the top four reasons for those delays really were opposition related. One is, you know, they said direct opposition, the other is local ordinance and zoning. Both of those things are driven by community sentiment. And I think that when it comes to tackling this issue, it really is working with developers to establish trust with the communities in which they work, but also speak with relevance. And what do I mean by trust? There's that term that is often used in a way that is derogatory, but I think it shouldn't be used that way. And that's the term NIMBY, not in my backyard. The reaction of communities, that they may not want these community-changing projects in their vicinity. And I think what it's important for developers to understand and acknowledge, which allows them to build trust, is the fact that NIMBY is a completely rational point of view. People live where they live because they value where they live. And a lot of these projects entail significant change, mainly to the viewshed. And recognizing that this change will impact people and speaking to them in a way that respects that concern is that first step towards building trust. And once you can build trust, you can start speaking to them with relevance. And when it comes to relevance, it's really knowing how to manage community outreach in a way that is specific to that technology. And each technology has its different challenges. And whether it's solar and wind, there's a pretty settled playbook when it comes to opposition. You know, storage, it's always going to be about fires. You know, transmission is tough because the benefits are often separated from its neighbors. Fossil fuel is about to have its moment, but it'll have a lot of pushback from the environmental community. And then with the rise of nuclear again, I think that one is going to be particularly interesting because the deck has been completely shuffled when it comes to opponents and proponents of these projects.
Hello, listeners. If you're enjoying the Energy Transitions podcast and you're interested in innovative energy projects endorsed by the European Commission, why not try Enlit's other podcast, EU Energy Projects Podcast? Give it a listen via enlit.world/podcasts or wherever you find your podcasts. if we consider what's happening in the US at the moment, issues around energy, it's quite politicized, quite polarized. So when it comes to building trust, I mean, this is really the crux of it, right? It's communicating in a way that fosters that trust, that is relevant to the community in which these projects are being built. How do you do that? I mean, what kind of strategies do you employ to actually encourage that buy-in? And I mean, it's not just a case of greenwashing. You have to be communicating in a way that's factual and that is transparent. Surely.
When it comes to building the trust that you just spoke of with specific communities, I think it all comes down to very strong messaging that focuses on the priorities of the people you're speaking with. Every place has its own pulse. Its priorities, its people, its pace. And when it comes to making sure that people care about your project, the best way to do that is talk to them about the things that they care about. And I'll give you an example. You know, some of the projects in rural northeastern communities that we work on, when we talk about a project, we talk about the jobs that it'll create, you know, the significant taxes it'll pay over the coming years, and the support that it'll deliver to family farms that may be leasing their land to these projects. And we make sure that when we're talking to these communities, we are always talking about those specific key messages. You'll notice I didn't talk about carbon reduction or green energy. They're always part of our narrative, but they're not the most important thing. And the reason for that is because A, a lot of the communities in which we're working in may not believe in climate change. And B, it's not their number one priority when looking at these projects and considering them for their towns or villages or their counties. But those other elements are. And it's a sign of respect that we're talking to you about the things that matter to you and that you care about, as opposed to talking to you about the things that we care about. So it's always taking that community-focused approach when it comes to messaging and then designing the tactics and strategies that go along with that messaging.
John, let's be honest. When it comes to the energy transition, people are at the heart of it. It's a people transition. And, you know, while, yes, today we're focusing on the U.S. because it's, you know, in a state of flux at the moment and quite fascinating. These principles apply around the world. Project developers, utilities that are having to wrap their heads around perhaps new investment strategies based on policy changes. And of course, they're trying to ensure a healthy bottom line. So there's a direct link between building the trust and fostering these relationships with communities, getting buy-in, but at the end of the day, protecting the bottom line of your organization and ensuring your project realizes.
I think that is an absolute key point. And I think there are two things to think about when considering that. Is one, take community buy-in and the potential disruption of opposition seriously, because they do have a very real financial impact. As I mentioned, the study that I mentioned earlier, it is cited as the number one reason that projects are canceled, community opposition. And as one developer I worked with said, the most expensive project he has is the one that never gets built. And there's also substantial cost delays. Those are often driven by community opposition. So investing in upfront, understanding your community and building the right engagement policies is a smart investment. The second thing is there really are two sides to every outreach campaign, whether it be in the U.S. or anywhere. And the first is, you know, subject matter expertise, how to deal with community engagement and building campaigns that support a project. Same with your regulatory attorney. You're going to go in with an attorney that knows the regulatory and permitting space. You're not going to go in with someone who knows how to do, who's a generalist who might do a will or a house sale. You're going to go with the right expertise. Do that with your communications as well. And the second thing that is vitally important is make sure that you understand intimately how each community works and what makes them tick, because that's going to let you set up the strategies to reach the right people at the right time, and it's going to let you set up the right messaging that actually moves people to support your project.
John, earlier you touched on the different kinds of projects and obviously the various strategies that come with them. So it's a little bit different for renewables or storage or nuclear. What are you predicting in terms of the projects that will be receiving attention? Are we going to see more nuclear projects receive funding and investment. And what do you think the reaction to that's going to be? Because obviously in the past, nuclear hasn't perhaps had the best reputation in terms of safety. And perhaps that is a concern for communities. How do you address that?
Yeah, because I think nuke is going to be one of the most interesting spaces from a community outreach perspective. I'm not smart enough to know how the financing is going to work or what we're going to see in the with the development timelines. But here's what I think is the old playbook, where you had the right leaning and the business community supporting this technology, whereas the left leaning environmental community hating this technology. That dichotomy no longer exists. You've got on the economic right side people that are more focused on fossil, are more focused on low-cost gas, but you also have local communities understanding that with the installation of a new facility, you've got generations of long-term, high-paying jobs. On the left, you have people that see the environmental risks that occurred with older technologies, but you also see, especially in younger environmentalists, a chance to get to large amounts of baseload energy with zero carbon emissions. And then on top of that, you have a whole new playbook of support and opposition that has sprung up around social media and has been really forged in the fire of local fights for and against renewables. So you put that all together, this is not the type of development that happened in the 60s and 70s and 80s. It is a whole new world, and it's going to require a whole new dynamic when it comes to organizing around a support for a specific technology or project. And I think that's going to be whether you're for it or against it, it's going to be a really interesting space to be involved with and watch as well.
I would like to take a step back for a moment, John, because obviously when it comes to communication strategies, you work with developers, but you work with a variety of stakeholders. And I think, if I look at utilities as well and how they communicate with their customers to encourage buy-in and ensure that everyone is on the same page to really drive forward a transition of the energy system. What are the trends that you're seeing in terms of that? And how are utilities having to adapt?
You're completely right. And utilities stand in a very unique position in that they stand between all the infrastructure and where people think they get their electricity in most cases, the holes in the wall. And now it has become a much more nuanced conversation, where people understand the impacts to their monthly bill that come from the generation mix or the lack of access to transmission of whether they be electricity or gas or other forms, and how the development of renewables impacts all this. And what we see in terms of best practices of the utilities that do well and do it right is increased transparency. They are in a relationship with their customers that is unique. And when it comes to its transparency of how their bill is established between consumption and delivery, et cetera, how the impact of public policies affect that as well. And also how they, most importantly, is how they treat and speak to their audiences. And we've seen that, it started off, they talked about people as being ratepayers. And then it moved on to they're talking about their customers. And the ones that do best, they talk about humans, the people that are actually being impacted by their energy bills. And when you get to that and you treat them with respect and you show transparency, it's at that point you can create a relationship that works.
John, for people who perhaps don't believe that prioritizing communication strategies or community engagement is not 100% critical to the successful realization of projects, what do you have to say to those people?
For those individuals that might question the value of comms, I think, look at the proof. Look at any big transformative infrastructure project, whether it be generation or transmission or storage, there is always a good community relations strategy that went along with it. And when it comes to projects that have failed or seen significant delays, there's always a bad community relations story associated with it. And those costs are real. If that doesn't move you, I don't know what does.
What keeps you interested in this work? Is it because you are passionate about energy? Is it your passion for people? Is it your passion for seeing the two come together in a harmonious way?
I think you hit on a lot of the points right there. But I tell you that we have a great team that really loves just doing this. And I think it comes down to, like, whereas energy seems like an abstract industry when it comes to people, it is the one thing that really affects everybody's lives. And it really does come, at the end of the day, good projects come down to human connections, from establishing relevance and trust and meeting people where they are. And there's just something special about, you've got an issue that is global in nature, but when it comes down to achieving success, a lot of times it has to do with meeting a community in a church basement and hashing it out. And that's a really cool space to be.
Despite the polarization that is appearing to be there, the fact is the energy transition is still moving and people are still at the core of that transition. And it's very encouraging to hear what you're saying, that it really does come down to the community. So thank you so much for sharing your insights.
Yeah. And if I could leave with anyone, anything, and your listeners as well, is if you're considering putting together effective communication strategies, make sure you put resources into figuring out how specific communities tick and what is important to them. Because you need someone to be able to manage the storms that will come your way, but you also need to do it with a way that respects the individual communities. And you put those two things together, good things happen.
Wise words indeed. Thank you so much, John. It has been a pleasure.
Thank you.
And thank you to our listeners. Until next time, goodbye. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Energy Transitions Podcast, brought to you by Enlit and Friends. That's a wrap from me, Pamela Log, and our producer, Kamo Motse. We hope you can join us next time. Visit enlit.world or subscribe for more episodes.